His nephew slithered upstairs. "It ain't money," said Mac. "It's gratitude. For years, Doc's took care of us. Get sick, he cures us. Get broke, he's there with a buck."
"Everybody says the same," the patron observed. He could not put his finger on the attack, and yet he felt there was an attack. The sound of his own voice had a warming, reassuring effect on Mac. He was the professional, practicing his profession.
"We might have went right on hustling Doc for years," he said, "if only Doc didn't get his ass in a sling."
"He's in trouble?"
"You know he's in trouble," said Mac. "Poor bastard sits there beating his brains out with them supplepods."
"You told me."
"Well, us boys want to do something about it. We ain't going to see our darling friend crap out if we can help it. I bet he done a couple of nice things for you, too."
The patron said, "Do you know you can't rig a chess game?"
"We had that out," said Mac impatiently. "Doc's business ain't been good. He can't crack open them supplepods without he gets a great big goddamn microscope. Cost about $400.
The patron said hastily, "If you're passing the hat, I'll throw in $10.
"Thanks," said Mac passionately. "I knew you was a good guy, but that ain't it. I and the boys want to do it ourselves. We don't want your $10. We want your advice."
The patron went behind the counter, opened the icebox, took out two cans of beer, speared them open, and slid one up the counter to Mac.
"Thanks," said Mac, and he beered down his dry mouth and throat. "Ha," he said. "That's fine. Now, here's what we want to know. We got something, and we want to raffle it. Then we want to take that raffle money and get that microscope for Doc. We want you should give us a hand with the tickets and stuff like that."
"What you going to raffle?" the patron asked. This was the moment, the horrible moment. Mac's hand shook a little as he poured down the second half of the cool, sharp beer. His insides quaked.
"The Palace Flophouse. Our home," he said.
The patron took a pocket comb out of stock and ran it through his black, shining hair.
"It ain't worth $400, he said.
Mac nearly cried with relief. He could have kissed the patron's hand. He loved Joseph and Mary. A strong and tender tone issued from his throat.
"We know that," he said, "but it's our home. Oh, I know it ain't very valuable, but when you got something that ain't worth much, why, you raffle it, don't you? If you got a good cause, you can raffle an old pair of socks."
A new respect showed in the patron's eyes.
"You got something there," he said, and then, "Who's going to win it?"
Mac felt confident now. He knew his man. He was ready to use his knowledge. He said confidentially,
"I don't ever try to kid a smart hombre. I could tell you we was going to draw honest, but you'd know that was double malarkey. No, we got an idea."
The patron leaned forward. Some of his wariness was lulled. He was still no pushover, but he was softened up.
"What's your idea?" he asked. "Well, we gotta have some place to live, don't we? Now, this is between I and the boys and you, okay?"
"Okay," said the patron.
"We'll sell Doc a ticket, or maybe just put a ticket in his name, and we'll rig the raffle so he wins."
"I don't get it," said the patron.
"Look," said Mac, "Doc gets his microscope, don't he? And we go right on habiting in the Palace Flophouse, but it's Doc's. It's a sap to his old age, a kind of insurance. I and the boys figure that's the least we can do for him.
Suppose he sells it, said the patron.
Oh, not Doc. He wouldn't put us out in the street.
A smile spread over the patron's large, handsome face. He could find no fault with it.
I guess I never give you proper credit, he said. You're smart. Maybe we can do some business. I mean, later. You got the raffle tickets?
We made 'em up last night. Mac laid a little pile of cards on the table.
How much apiece?
Says right on 'em, Mac said. $2.
My first offer still stands, said the patron. I'll take 5, and you can leave me some to sell.
Think you could use 20?
I could unload nearly 50, said the patron. I'll put them out with the Espaldas Mojadas.
Mac's knees were weak as he went up the chicken walk. His glazed eyes stared straight ahead. He walked right past the boys and into the palace flophouse, sat down heavily on his bed. The boys trooped in behind him and stood around.
Got him, said Mac. He don't know he owns it. He bought 5 tickets and he's gonna sell 50 to his wetbacks.
There is a point of relief and triumph in which words have no place. Eddie went outside, and they could hear his shovel strike the ground. Mac and the boys knew Eddie was digging up a keg. And this was only one of the happenings on that sweet Thursday. Chapter 20, Sweet Thursday 2. Fauna always drew the shades of her bedroom tight down. Because of the late hours of business, she had to sleep until noon to get her proper rest. On the morning of Sweet Thursday, the sun played a trick on her. The window shade had a hole in it no bigger than the point of a pin. The playful sun picked up the doings of Cannery Row, pushed them through the pinhole, turned them upside down, and projected them in full color on the wall of Fauna's bedroom. Wide Ida waddled across the wall upside down, wearing a print dress sewn with red poppies, and on her head a black beret. The Pacific Gas and Electric truck rolled across her wall upside down, its wheels in the air. Mac strode toward the grocery store, head down, and a little later, Doc, weary, feet over his head, walked along the wallpaper carrying a quart of beer that would have spilled if it had not been an illusion. At first, Fauna tried to go back to sleep, but she was afraid she might miss something. It was the little colored ghost of upside-down Doc that drew her from her couch. It is a common experience that a problem difficult at night is resolved in the morning after the committee of sleep has worked on it. And this had happened to Fauna. She was glad when she raised the shade and saw how beautiful was the day. The roof of the Hediondo cannery, where seagulls had perched, glowed like a pearl. Fauna brushed her hair severely back and put on a close-fitting hat of black sequins. She wore her dark gray knitted suit and carried gloves. In the kitchen, she put 6 bottles of beer in a paper bag, and then, as an afterthought, she rooted out one of the shrunken monkey heads as a present. When she climbed the stairs of Western Biological and stood at the top, puffing a little, you might have thought she was soliciting for the Red Cross instead of for the bear flag. Doc was frying sausages, sprinkling a little chocolate over them. It gave them an odd and oriental flavor, he thought.
You're up early, he greeted Fauna. I figured 1 quart of beer wouldn't last long.
It didn't, said Doc. Have a couple of sausages?
Don't mind if I do, said Fauna, for she knew that he who gives to you is in debt to you. This here's a monkey head that I picked up in my travels.
Interesting, said Doc. You know, there's some folks think they're people's heads, said Fauna.
Don't see how they could. See the shape of the eyes and ears? Look at the nose.
Oh, some folks don't look at people very close, said Fauna. I'll have a bottle of beer with you.
The taste of the chocolate sausages intrigued her.
I never tasted nothing like it, she observed. Did you ever eat grasshoppers, Doc?
Yes, said Doc, in Mexico. They're kind of peppery. Fauna was not one to beat around the bushes.
You must get sick of everybody wanting something from you, she said.
Doc smiled. I'd be sicker if they didn't, he said. What can I do for you?
Say, thanks for the cake and the beer last night.
Fauna asked, what did you think of the kid?
Strange, said Doc. Somehow I can't see her working at the bear flag.
Neither can I, said Fauna. She ain't no good at it, but it looks like I'm stuck with her. Trouble with Susie is she's got a streak of lady in her, and I don't know how to root it out.
Doc munched his sausages and sipped his beer thoughtfully. I never thought of it, but that could be a drawback, he said.
She's a nice kid, said Fauna. I like her fine, but she's a liability in a business way.
Why don't you kick her out?
Oh, I can't, said Fauna. She's had a tough time. I never had no gift for kicking people out. What I'd like is if she'd pick up and go. She's got no future as a floozy.
She threw the book at me, said Doc.
You see, said Fauna, she's a character. That ain't no good in a house.
She slapped me in the face with a few basic truths, said Doc. That's a quick eye she's got.
And a quicker tongue, said Fauna. Would you do me a favor?
Why, of course, said Doc. Anything I can.
I can't go to nobody else, Fauna went on. They wouldn't understand.
What is it?
Doc, said Fauna, I knocked around and I seen all kinds. I tell you, if you got a streak of lady in you, it spoils you for anything else. Now, you never come over to the bear flag. You play the field. I personally think that cost you more, but I ain't one to mess in the way people want to live.
I don't think I'm following you, said Doc.
Okay, I'll lay out the deck. When you're making a play for one of them babes, them amateurs, you got to do quite a lot of talking before you make the sack. Ain't that right?
Doc smiled ruefully.
Right, he said. Well, do you always mean every word of it?
Doc pinched his lower lip.
Why, I guess right at the moment I do.
But afterward?
Afterward, if I were to think about it, that's what I mean, said Fauna. So if you happen to tell a little teensy-weensy bit of baloney, you don't blow your brains out.
You'd do well in the analysis business, said Doc.
What do you want me to do?
This kid Susie's lousy with new roses. She ain't a good hustler because of that streak of lady. I don't know if she'd make a good lady or not. I want her off my neck.
Doc, would it do you any harm to make a play for her? I mean, like you do with them dames that come in here.
What good could that possibly do? He asked.
Well, maybe I'm wrong, but the way I figure it, you can use new roses if you want to. If you made a pitch for the kid, like she was a lady, why, she might turn lady on you.
I still can't see what good it would do, said Doc.
It would get her the hell out of the bear flag, said Fauna. She wouldn't want to congregate with no more floozies.
How about me? Said Doc.
You don't marry them others, do you?
No, but take a twang at her, will you, Doc? Fauna begged.
Can't do you no harm. Why, hell, she might scram out of here and take up typewriting or telephone operating.
Will you do that for me, Doc?
He said,
It doesn't seem honest. Fauna changed her tack. I was talking to her last night, and she said she couldn't remember when a guy had treated her like a girl. What harm would that do?
Might make her miserable.
Might make her fly the coop.
Maybe she likes it the way it is.
She don't. I tell you, she's a blowed-in-the-glass lady. Look, Doc, you take her out to dinner, and I'll buy the dinner. You don't have to make no pass. Just be nice to her.
I'll have to think about it.
Think you might do it?
I might.
That's a good kid if you treat her right. You'd be doing me a big favor.
Suppose she won't go.
She will. I won't give her no choice.
Doc looked out the window and a warmth crept through him, and suddenly he felt better than he could remember feeling.
I'll think about it, he said. I'll throw in 3 bottles of champagne whenever you say the word, said Fauna.
After lunch, Joe Elegant read Fauna his latest chapter. He explained the myth and the symbol.
You see, he said, the grandmother stands for guilt.
Ain't she dead and buried?
Yes.
That's a kind of messy guilt.
It's the reality below reality, said Joe Elegant.
Balls, said Fauna. Listen, Joe, why don't you write a story about something real?
Maybe you can tell me about the art of writing, he said.
I sure as hell can, said Fauna. There's this guy, and he makes love to this dame.
Very original, said Joe.
When a man says words, he believes them, even if he thinks he's lying.
For goodness sake, what are you talking about?
I bet I get rid of a certain person and put up a new gold star.
You want to take that bet?
How did Doc like the cake? Joe Elegant asked. He loved it, said Fauna.
And this was the second event of that sweet Thursday. Chapter 21. Sweet Thursday was one hell of a day. Fission took place in the palace flophouse, and from there a chain reaction flared up in all directions. Cannery Row caught fire. Mac and the boys had the energy and the enthusiasm of plutonium. Only very lazy men could have done so much in so short a time. Oh, the meetings, the messages carried, the plans and the counterplans. Mac had to make more and more raffle tickets. What started as a kind of gentle blackmail assumed the nature of an outpouring of popular love for Doc. People bought tickets, sold tickets, traded tickets. Emissaries covered the Southern Pacific Depot, the Greyhound bus station. Joe Blakey, the constable, carried tickets in his pocket and canceled parking summonses if the lawbreaker bought a $2 chance on the palace flophouse. Whitey Number 1 invaded the foreign and fancy purlieus of Pebble Beach and Carmel and the Highlands. Whitey Number 2's method was characteristically direct. The first man to refuse him got a rock through his windshield, and the news traveled. To the boys, it had become a crusade, and the winning ticket, of course, with Doc's name on it, was in a tomato can, buried in the vacant lot. By tacit agreement, no one mentioned the raffle to Doc. To Doc's friends, Mac and the boys mentioned the rigging of the lottery, but to strangers, who cared? It was a perfect example of the collective goodness and generosity of a community. But if communities have a group good fairy, they also have an imp who works parallel with and sometimes in collaboration with the good fairy. Cannery Row's imp saw the good fairy stirring to life, and he sprang to action. Into the ears of his clients he whispered a few words, and his constituents grinned with evil pleasure, and their thoughts went like this. The patron is a wise guy. He's a newcomer,
Nice clothes, makes his money off poor helpless wetbacks because he's smart. Lee Chong must have sold him the palace flophouse, and he's forgot it, or he never knew it. Once Doc wins it, the patron won't dare make a move. It is such fun to outsmart a smart guy. The imp of the row had a good professional time, and for once his job seemed almost virtuous. People bought more tickets from the patron than from anyone else. They wanted to watch his face so they could compare it with his face when he found out. Now, ordinarily, Mac and the boys would have strung out the ticket sales over weeks, but time was breathing down their necks. If the patron got his tax bill from the county, their plan would blow up in their faces. They had to take a chance with Friday. Saturday was the deadline. The boys spread the word that there would be medium-heavy refreshments at the palace flophouse on Saturday night, and that contributions of any nature would be welcome. Mac called on Doc the afternoon of Sweet Thursday. "If you ain't doing anything Saturday night," he said, "I and the boys are throwing a little wing-ding. RSVP.
Moi, je réponds oui.
Come again?
I'll be there," said Doc.
Then Mac remembered a mission with which he had been entrusted. "I guess I could squirm it out of you, Doc, like I done once before," he said. "But I'll come right out in the open. When's your birthday?"
A shudder went through Doc.
"Please, don't give me a party," he begged. "The last one you gave nearly ruined me."
"This hasn't got nothing to do with a party. It's a bet," said Mac. "I stand to win a buck. When is it?"
Mac prodded him. Doc picked the first date that came to him.
"July 4th, he said.
"Why, that's like the 4th of July."
"A little," said Doc, and he felt greatly relieved.
Later that afternoon, Fauna and the girls called formally at the palace flophouse in answer to the note Mac had sent asking them to drink a jolt of good stuff. Susie did not attend. She had been quiet all morning, and then she mooned away on the path that leads along the sea to the lighthouse on Point Pinos. She looked in the tide pools, and she picked a bunch of the tiny flowers that grow as close to the ocean as they can. Susie was restless and unhappy. She felt excitement and nausea at the same time. She wanted to smile, and she wanted to cry, and she was scared and happy and hopeless. Doc had asked her to have dinner with him at Sunny Boy's on the pier, and Fauna had urged her to go. Susie's first reaction had been violent.
"I won't do it," she said.
"Sure you'll go," said Fauna. "I may have to persuade you with an indoor ball bat, but you'll go."
"You can't make me."
"Want to test that? Why, I've wore my brains down to the knuckles trying to do something nice for you."
"I ain't got nothing to wear," said Susie.
"Neither has Doc. If he can go like he does, what right's a chippy to get grand?"
"But hell, Fauna, he's got it inside. People like me got to put on a puff because they got nothing else. I'm afraid I'll turn mean because I don't know how to be nice."
"Susie," said Fauna, "I'm going to give you a piece of advice, and if you won't take it, I may just call Joe Blakey and get you floated right out of town. Don't throw the first punch. Wait till you're hit before you put up your dukes. Most of the time, they ain't nobody laid a glove on you."
"Suppose I could wear my suit. It's got a big spot."
"Ask Joe Elegant to spot clean it and press it. Tell him I said so."
And thus it was that Susie went walking out Lighthouse Way on Sweet Thursday. The meeting in the palace wasn't really necessary, for word of the raffle had got round and Fauna had bought 10 tickets and made each girl buy one. Eddie had borrowed glasses from Wide Ida's, for once with her permission.
She was invited to the meeting, too, and she brought 2 quarts of Pine Canyon whiskey. It don't cost hardly nothing, she explained. Formality took hold of the meeting. Agnes and Mabel kept their knees together when they sat down, and Fauna's look of thunder made Becky snap hers shut so quickly she spilled her drink.
She's gonna be a Wallager, said Mac. I can't wait to see Doc's face when he wins. White Ida asked, how are you going to explain it to him he wins when he didn't buy no ticket?
Why, we'll say a friend did it, and don't want his name mentioned. I saw Doc a little while ago. He said he'd sure be here.
Fauna said, did you find out when is his birthday?
Sure, July 4th.
Fauna exhaled with the sound of escaping gas.
Holy apples! He's a gone goose. He's got a born-on-Oregon boot. I never seen nothing work out so nice.
What are you talking about? Said Mac.
Fauna's eyes were misty.
Mac, she said huskily, I don't want to horn in on your party, but why couldn't we make it an engagement party, too?
Who's engaged?
Well, they ain't yet, but they will be.
Who?
Doc and Susie. It's right in their horoscopes.
Suppose they won't.
They will, said Fauna. You can just depend on that. They will.
The little group sat in silence, and then Mac said softly,
did I say it was going to be a Wallager? This here's a Tom Wallager. They ain't been nothing so stupendous since the Second World War. You sure Doc'll go for it?
You let me take care of that, and don't none of you blab it to him. One time I managed a fighter, Kiss of Death Kelly, welterweight. I'll have Doc in the ring.
Eddie asked, what about Susie?
Susie's already in the ring, said Fauna.
They parted quietly, but in their breasts a flame of emotion burned. There never was a day like that sweet Thursday, and it wasn't over yet.
Chapter 22 The Arming. At 4:30 in the afternoon, Fauna ordered Susie to the office bedroom with full field equipment. Susie dumped her clothes on Fauna's bed.
That's a hell of a way to keep wrinkles out, Fauna observed.
She picked up the gray woolen skirt and jacket, laid them out, inspected them for spots, smelled them for cleaning fluid.
Nice piece of goods, she said.
Community chest, said Susie. I was in the charity ward.
Well, somebody wasn't.
Her eyes noted the brown shoes.
She went to the door and yelled, Joe! Joe Elegant!
He looked in. I'm not supposed to be on duty, he said.
I'm a thorn in the side of the worker, said Fauna. You run up the street to Wildock's and get new heel taps on these here. Tell them to fix this scuffed place and give them a nice shine. Wait and bring them back.
Joe complained as he went. But he went.
Fauna said to Susie, you got any gloves?
No.
I'll lend you some. Here, these white ones. And here's a handkerchief. I don't want no lipstick marks on it. Now, you listen to me, Susie girl. Take care of your shoes, wear clean gloves, carry a white handkerchief, and keep your stocking seam straight. If you do that, you can get away with murder. This here's a nice suit, the kind of cloth that the older it gets, the better it looks, if your heels ain't run over. Call Becky in.
When Becky entered, Fauna said,
ain't you got a white piqué dickie and cuffs?
I just done them up.
I want you to lend them to Susie. Get some thread and sew the cuffs in this here jacket.
She'll have to wash them.
She will.
While Becky basted in the cuffs, Fauna said,
turn out your purse, Susie.
She inspected the pile on the bed.
You don't need that aspirin. Here. Take my comb. Throw that one away. Ain't nothing tackier than a comb missing teeth. Put these here Kleenex in. Here, Use my compact and touch up that shine on your nose once in a while. Let's see your nails. Pretty good. You washed your hair?
Get her a wig, said Becky, and she bit the thread.
Don't get smart. Come on now. Get off your behind and do something with your hair, and not fancy, neither.
To Susie, she said, Becky got a light hand with hair. You can't take that coat. Community chest slipped up there. She tapped her teeth with a pencil, and then went to her closet and brought out two Baumartens that were biting each other's heads off.
Just hand these here Baumartens over your shoulder, Fauna said, and if you lose them or hurt them, I'll cut your tripes out. Now, where are we?
No perfume. Douse some of this Florida water on. Kind of old-fashioned and young-smelling. Becky stood behind Susie's chair, brushing and combing and molding.
She's got big ears, Becky said. Maybe I can kind of hide 'em a little.
You got a nice hand with hair, Fauna said. The final briefing took place at 6 o'clock, with the bedroom door closed.
Turn around, said Fauna. Keep your ankles close together. Now walk.
That's good. You got a real nice walk. Like I said, you're a good-looking kid if you work at it a little.
Susie looked at herself in the mirror, and she smiled, for it seemed to her that she really was pretty. And the idea startled her and pleased her, too. And when she looked pleased, she was even prettier. Then her mouth turned down, and blind panic came over her.
"What's the matter?" Fauna demanded.
"What can I talk about? Fauna, I don't want to go. I don't belong with a guy like Doc. Jesus, Fauna, tell him I'm sick. I ain't going."
Fauna let her talk herself out, and then she said quietly, "Maybe you'd like to cry now and get your eyes red after all my trouble. Go on, cry."
"I'm sorry," said Susie. "You've been nice. I ain't no good, Fauna. You're just wasting your time. I know what I'll do. Minute he says something I don't understand, I'll get mad. I'm scared."
"Course you're scared," said Fauna. "But if you didn't care nothing about Doc, you wouldn't be scared. You didn't invent it. There ain't never been no dame went out first time with a guy she liked that wasn't scared. Maybe Doc's scared, too."
"Oh, nuts," said Susie.
Fauna said, "If I was your age, with your face and shape, and what I know, there wouldn't be no man in the world could get away. I got the know-how, but that's all I got." "Oh, well, I'm going to tell you a few thousand things, Susie, that if you'd listen, you'd get anything you want. But hell, you won't listen. Nobody listens, and when they learn the hard way, it's too late. Maybe it's a good thing, I don't know."
"I'll listen." "Sure, but you won't learn. You know, Susie, there ain't no way in the world to get in trouble by keeping your mouth shut. You look back at every mess you ever got in, and you'll find your tongue started it."
"That's true," said Susie, "but I can't seem to stop."
"You got to learn it like you learn anything else. Just practice. Next thing is opinions. You and me is always busting out with opinions. Hell, Susie, we ain't got no opinions. We just say stuff we heard or seen in the movies. We're scared we'll miss something, like running for a bus. That's the second rule. Lay off opinions, because you ain't really got any."
"You got 'em numbered, huh?" said Susie.
"I could write a book," said Fauna. "If she could, I could. Now take number 3. There don't hardly nobody listen, and it's so easy. You don't have to do nothing when you listen. If you do listen, it's pretty interesting. If a guy says something that pricks up your interest, why, don't hide it from him. Kind of try to wonder what he's thinking instead of how you're going to answer him back."
"You're sure putting the finger on me," Susie said softly.
"I only got a little more, but it's the hardest of all, and the easiest."
"What number?"
"I lost track. Don't pretend to be something you ain't, and don't make like you know something you don't, or sooner or later you'll fall on your ass. And there's one more part to this one, whatever number it is. They ain't nobody was ever insulted by a question. Suppose Doc says something and you don't know what it means. Ask him. The nicest thing in the world you can do for anybody is to let him help you.
Susie was silent, looking down at her hands. Fauna said,
"You got nice nails. How do you keep them so nice?"
Susie said, "That's easy. My grandma taught me. You keep an old lemon rind, and every time you wash your hands, you scrounge your fingernails around in it. And then you shake a little face powder on your hand, and you polish your nails on the ham of your hand, and you push down the quick with a little piece of lemon wood."
"See what I mean?" said Fauna. "What? I just asked you a question."
Susie blushed. "I sure fell into that."
"No, you didn't. I wanted to know. It's best if you ask when you want to know."
"Thanks," said Susie. "You're a hell of a dame. I wonder if I could learn."
"You can if you just remember a lot of things. First, you gotta remember you're Susie and you ain't nobody else but Susie. Then, you gotta remember that Susie is a good thing, a real valuable thing, and there ain't nothing like it in the world. It don't do no harm just to say that to yourself. Then, when you got that, remember that there's one hell of a lot Susie don't know. Only way she can find out is if she sees it, reads it, or asks it. Most people don't look at nothing but themselves, and that's a rat race."
"What's the fourth thing?" Susie asked.
"I'm proud of you," Fauna said. "You listened. The next thing you'll have to do some thinking about. Nobody don't give a particular damn about Susie one way or the other. It's hard to get them thinking about you because they're too busy thinking about themselves. There's 2-3 copper-bottom ways to get their attention. Talk about them. If you see something nice or good or pretty, tell them. Don't make it a fake, though. Don't fight nobody unless there ain't no other way. Don't never start a fight. And if one starts, let it get going good before you jump in. Best way in the whole world to defend yourself is to keep your dukes down. Now, when you got their attention, first thing they want is to do something for you. Let 'em. Don't get proud and say you don't need it or want it. That's a slap in the puss. Thing people like most in the world is to give you something and have you like it and need it. That ain't sloppy. That works. You give it a try."
"You think Doc would fall for that stuff?"
"Just give it a try."
Susie said, "Fauna, didn't you never get married?"
"No."
"Why not?"
Fauna smiled. "Time I learned what I just told you, it was too late."
"I love you," said Susie.
"Now you see, you got me softened up like butter. I want you should keep them furs. But watch it."
"Yeah, I see. I sure do thank you. And would you maybe write down all that stuff so I can get it by heart?"
"Sure I will. Now look, Susie, tonight, just before you say something, say it first to yourself and kind of dust it off."
"You mean cussing?"
"I mean cussing, and I mean, well, sometimes if you look at it, you don't say it. One whole hell of a lot that passes for talk is just running off at the mouth. I guess you're about ready now."
"Is there anything I can do for you, Fauna?"
"Yes. I want you should repeat after me, 'I'm Susie and nobody else.'"
"I'm Susie and nobody else."
"I'm a good thing."
"I'm a good thing."
"There ain't nothing like me in the whole world."
"There ain't nothing. God damn it, Fauna. Now my eyes'll be red."
"They look pretty that way," said Fauna.
At 7 o'clock, Doc, dressed in an open-collared shirt, leather jacket, and army pants, rang the bell at the Bear Flag. He looked at Susie, and he said, "I've got to make a telephone call. Do you mind?" and he ran back to the laboratory. 10 minutes later, he returned. He had on clean slacks, a tweed jacket, and a tie he hadn't used in years. Fauna saw him standing under the porch light.
"Honey," she said to Susie, "you win the first round on points."
Chapter 23. One Night of Love. Sonny Boy is truly the only Greek born in America named Sonny Boy. He operates a restaurant and bar on the wharf in Monterey. Sonny Boy is plump and getting plumper. Although he was born near Sutro Park in San Francisco and went to public schools, Sonny Boy has single-handedly kept alive the mystery of the Near East. His perfectly round face hints Orient Express and beautiful spies. His bushy voice is congenitally confidential. Sonny Boy can say, "Good evening," and make it sound like an international plot. His restaurant makes friends for him and supports him. Perhaps Sonny Boy, in one sense, wears a long black cape and dines with Balkan countesses where two seas kiss the golden horn, but he also runs a good restaurant. He probably knows more secrets than any man in the community, for his martinis are a combination truth serum and lie detector. Veritas is not only in vino, but regularly batters its way out. Doc stopped his old car in front of Sonny Boy's, got out, walked around, opened the door, and helped Susie out. She was a little shocked, but she remained silent. The sentence, "You think I'm a cripple, for Christ's sake," rose to her throat, but she followed Fauna's advice, whispered it, and pushed it back. The fact of his hand on her elbow did a magic thing to her, pushed back her shoulders and raised her chin. The gritty light of resistance went out of her eyes. Doc opened the door of the bar and stood aside to let Susie enter. The regulars on the stools turned to look. The eyes crept from pretty face to pretty legs, took in the Martins on the way. For 1 second, panic halted her, but she saw no look of recognition in the eyes of the regulars. Sonny Boy turned sideways to get around the end of the bar.
"Evening, folks," he said. "Your table's ready. Would you like to have a cocktail here, or shall I send one over?"
"Oh, let's sit at the table," said Doc. Sonny Boy bowed Susie through the door to the restaurant, and she strolled ahead with her nice walk. Sonny Boy, rolling along beside Doc, said in a conspiratorial whisper, "Your secretary called. It's all fixed."
"You got a secretary, Doc?"
Doc overcame his surprise. "Part-time," he said.
"Who's the lady? She new around here?"
"She's new around here," said Doc. He caught up with Susie. "This way," said Sonny Boy. He led them to a round table in front of the stone fireplace. A pine fire crackled and sent out its fragrance. The table had a centerpiece of wild iris. The breadsticks stood like soldiers in their glasses. The napkins were folded to make little crowns. It was the best table in the house, private, but downstage and well-lighted. Susie's eyes darted around the room. No other table had flowers. Something wonderful happened in Susie. She didn't walk around the table and sit down. She waited, and when Doc held her chair, she seated herself, looked smiling up at him, and said, "Thank you." Sonny Boy hovered over the table. "Good you telephoned," he said. "I had trouble getting Pompano, but I got it. How's about a cocktail? The wine's cooling." Doc said, "One time I had some kind of..."
"I remember," said Sonny Boy. "The Webster F. Street layaway plan. A martini made with chartreuse instead of vermouth."
"Very good."
"Very effective, as I remember," said Doc.
"Two doubles."
"Coming right up," said Sonny Boy.
I told Tony to be here to play piano, like you said, but he's sick.
Doc looked at Susie to see whether she knew Fauna had made the arrangements. She didn't.
It's probable that if Doc hadn't ordered the Webster F. Street layaway plans, he would have got them anyway. They arrived with a speed that indicated they were already mixed. The shock of a necktie was leaving Doc. He looked across the table and smiled at Susie, and he wondered, what is beauty in a girl that it can come and go? This Susie did not faintly resemble the tough hustler who had screamed at him the night before. He raised the cocktail glass.
You're pretty, he said. I'm glad you came with me. Here's to both of us.
Susie swallowed a gulp, held back her tears, and waited for the spasm to pass.
I should have warned you, said Doc. There's a rumor that this drink is made of rattlesnake venom and raw opium.
Susie got her breath.
It's good, she said, but I was watching its right hand and walked into a left hook.
Her mind cried, I shouldn't have said that. I forgot already. Then she saw Doc's amusement and was all right.
Susie noticed a waiter drifting delicately within earshot. She had discovered something for herself. When in doubt, move slowly. Her head turned toward the waiter, and he drifted away. She was delighted with her discovery. Everything in slow motion. She then lifted her glass slowly, looked at it carefully, then sipped and held it a moment before she put it down. Slowness. It gave meaning to everything. It made everything royal. She remembered how all the unsure and worried people she knew jumped and picked and jittered, just doing everything slowly, forcing herself. She felt a new kind of security. Don't forget, she told herself. Don't ever forget this. Slow. Slow. Doc gave her a cigarette and held a match, and she leaned forward so slowly that the flame was touching his fingers before she had lighted it. A lovely warmth stole through her body. She felt bold, not defensively bold, but safe. She asked, "Do they know what I am?" The layaway plan worked equally on all. Doc said, "They know you're with me. That's all they need to know. Shall we have one more?" It came before he got his finger raised for attention. If this was conspiracy, Sonny Boy wanted to be in on it. If Felicity, he liked that too.
I like a fire, Susie said. Once we had a fireplace where I lived.
Doc said, you're pretty.
Yes, by George, you're pretty.
Susie swallowed the first words that rose, and swallowed the second ones, and ended up by dropping her eyes and saying, thank you, softly. Sonny Boy personally escorted the waiter, who carried the ice bucket with the chilled Chablis. Then he stood back and surveyed the table.
How is everything, Doc?
Just fine, said Doc.
You ready to eat?
Any time, said Doc. And Susie's discovery continued to hold good. Take it slow, and keep your eyes open and your mouth shut. The cold cracked crab, the pompano, were new to her, and they required an eating technique she didn't know. She did everything a little behind Doc, and he wasn't conscious that she watched every move he made. When champagne and fruit and cheese arrived, Susie knew she had to be alone. A thought so overwhelming had come to her that her knees shook and the blood pounded in her temples. Slow, she warned herself. Take it easy. She looked at the leaping flames and then pivoted her head to Doc.
Will you excuse...
Of course. He jumped up and drew back her chair. Susie moved regally toward the ladies' room. She could not feel her feet against the floor. Doc watched her passage. Strange. Strange, he thought. What is it? Maidenly is the word. A kind of lonely and terrible modesty. What has made the change? Then he thought, it's an act. Fauna coached her. But he knew that wasn't true. Acting couldn't get into the eyes like that. Coaching couldn't draw the blood to her cheeks. He spun the champagne bottle in its bucket, and he found himself wishing she would hurry back. His eyes found a window that reflected the door to the ladies' room. Behind that door, Susie dampened a paper towel and put it against her forehead. She stared at herself in the mirror, and she didn't know the face. She thought of the dinner. "I hate fish," she said out loud. "It makes me break out. But I ain't broke out." Finally, she was ready to inspect the thought that had sent her out. The symbol, the mystery, the signpost with an inexorable pointing finger. It was so plain no one could miss it. Fate was not only pointing the way, but booting from behind. She thought of the dishes being taken away, the heaped legs and claws of crab, and they had eaten their horoscopes. Cancer and Pisces, fish and crab. "Great God Almighty," she said, and she was limp in the hands of fate. Sonny Boy came to the table. "Everything all right?" "Fine," said Doc. "Just like you ordered?" "Huh?" "Your secretary told me." "Fine," said Doc. "Just the way I wanted it." When Susie came back, she was dedicated. You can only fight fate so far, and when you give in to it, you're very strong, because all of your force flows in one direction. Doc held her chair, and then he popped the champagne cork and smelled it. Susie said, "Can I have it?" "Of course." Susie turned the cork in her fingers and looked at it. It was very beautiful. She put it in her purse and took an iris from the vase. "Do you like champagne?" "I love it," she said, and wondered what it would taste like. And she did love it. Doc said, "You know, out in the sand dunes, there are little valleys covered with pines. Sometime, when you can, let's take meat and things out there and cook our supper. It's very nice." "The fire reminded you?" said Susie. "That's clever of you." "So it did." She said, "Doc, will you sometime teach me about the stuff you got in your place?" "Sure I will." A surge of affection filled him, but he was a little afraid, too, of her terrible modesty. He looked away from her eyes to the wild iris in her hand. "There's an old Welsh story," he said. "It's about a poor knight who made a wife completely out of flowers." The wine was strong in Susie now. She said the sentence twice to herself before she said it aloud to Doc. "I hope she didn't wilt." The low voice of Doc's guts burst through at last. "I'm lonely," he said. He said it as a simple matter of fact, and he said it in wonder. Then he apologized. "I guess I'm a little drunk." He felt very shy. He filled the glasses. "What the hell? Let's have some brandy, too." Susie turned half away from him so that her face was outlined in leaping pine flames. "You know that place you said? Out in the sand dunes?" "Yes." "Could we look at it?" "Whenever you want." "On our way home?"
You'll ruin your shoes.
I know, said Susie.
You could take them off.
I will, said Susie.
Chapter 24. Waiting Friday. Not everyone believes that Friday is unlucky, but nearly everybody agrees it's a waiting day. In business, the week is really over. In school, Friday is the half-open gate to freedom. Friday is neither a holiday nor a work day, but a time of wondering what Saturday will bring. Trade and amusement fall off. Women look through their closets to see what they have to wear. Supper is leftovers from the week. Joe Elegant ordered sand dabs for supper at the Bear Flag. The Espaldas Mojadas returned from their latest triumph and were ushered with great courtesy to the rooms over the grocery. The patron distributed bottles of tequila. Also, he kept a saucer of Seconal at hand. Sometimes a passion of homesickness got into his wetbacks. Sleep, he thought, was better than fighting. Doc slept late, and when he went to the grocery for his morning beer, he found Joseph and Mary alert and gay, and the sound of singing drifted down the stairs.
"Have a good time?" the patron asked.
"What do you mean?" Doc demanded.
"Didn't you have a nice party last night?"
"Oh, sure," said Doc. He said it with finality.
"Doc, I'd like you to teach me more of that chess. You still think you can cheat at it, do you?"
"No, I'd just like to figure it out. I got a case of Bohemia beer from Mexico, all cold."
"Wonderful," said Doc. "That's the best beer in the Western Hemisphere."
"It's a present," said the patron.
"Why?"
"I don't know. Maybe I just feel good."
"Thanks," said Doc. He began to feel uneasy.
There were eyes on him. Going back to Western Biological, he felt eyes on him. "It's the brandy," he thought. "I shouldn't drink brandy. Makes me nervous." He scrambled two eggs and shook curry powder over them. He consulted the tide chart in Thursday's Monterey Herald. There was a fair tide at 2:18 p.m., enough for chitons and brittle stars if the wind wasn't blowing inshore by then. The Bohemia beer settled his nerves without solving his restlessness, and for once the curried eggs didn't taste very good. Fauna knocked and entered. She flicked her hand at the rattlesnakes.
"How do you feel, Doc?"
"All right."
"Get drunk?"
"A little."
"How was the dinner?"
"Wonderful. You know what to order."
"I ought to. Say, you want a box or should we lay it on the line?"
"See what I mean about her?"
"Yes. How does she feel?"
"She ain't up yet."
"I'm going collecting."
"Want me to tell her that?"
"Why should you?"
"Wait, I've got her purse. Want to take it to her?"
"Hell, she ain't crippled. Maybe she'll want to get it herself."
"I won't be here."
"You'll be back."
"Say," he said, "what the hell is this?"
She knew he might turn angry now.
"I got a lot to do. You ain't mad at me?"
"Why should I be?"
"Well, if you need anything, let me know."
"Fauna," he began.
"Oh, let it go."
"What do you want?"
"I was going to ask you something, but I don't want to know."
Susie was hunched over a cup of coffee when Fauna got back.
"Morning," said Fauna. And then, "I said good morning."
"Oh, yeah," said Susie. "Morning."
"Look at me."
"Why not?" Susie raised her eyes.
"You can look down now," said Fauna.
You don't know nothing, said Susie.
Okay, I don't know nothing. When did I ever get nosy with you? Joe, she called, bring me a cup of coffee.
She slid a